The first question is for Manish. So what is this about your grandfather being a well-known itinerant magician? What is his story, and what wisdom did you glean from him?
Okay, well, that's a good question, a question I've never been asked before, which is great. So my grandfather, his name was Gogia Pasha, and he's now been passed away, I don't know, almost 40 years. So I have a lot of great childhood memories with him, and he was a world-famous magician. Actually, he performed for Queen of England. He's performed for just all kinds of royalty and heads of state all over. He appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show and so on. So he traveled the world and did a great job. The thing is that he was a person who was, till the end, till the last days of his life, focused on improving his art and improving. So he was always continuously working on getting better and such. So I just learned lifetime improvement and continuous learning from him. I also learned that he was just great with kids. I mean, every time in summers when I used to go to my my grandfather's place for the summers, I really look forward to it because he always knew the great places to eat and all, especially the great dessert places, and we'd go on hikes and walks and different things. It was just a lot of fun. And a few times in his shows, I kind of played the role of a helper. I was 10 years old, which is kind of first time on stage, which is great.
That's fascinating. Secretary Bacow, Warren Buffett in his 1983 Berkshire Hathaway Letters to Shareholders describes economic goodwill as a business logically is worth far more than net tangible assets when they can be expected to produce earnings on such assets considerably in excess of market rates of return. The capitalized value of the excess return is economic goodwill. Section 936 benefits developed Puerto Rico academic hard sciences and the University of Puerto Rico to a level comparable with the United States through a thriving pharmaceutical industry that still generates economic goodwill for the local economy today. Thus, the high potential of a bilingual Puerto Rican workforce in a service export economy would generate significant economic goodwill under the right management. What other ways have the current tax incentives, such as Act 20 and 22, created economic goodwill for the island?
Very good. First of all, for my new life in beginning in January, I will continue reading about Warren Buffett and Monish and watching the YouTube. So because I will begin my last third of my career. So that's what I know of Warren Buffett. But what I can tell you, when you ask that question, comes to my mind, is the example that I use of what's going on in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico has a lot of hidden assets, hidden value, economic value to be developed. And it's like when you go into a turnaround, you have to decide if you have a good economic model, if you have a good brand, because the financial side can be solved if you have that. Mm-hmm. When I took office, I really knew that Puerto Rico had all these advantages. It has a lot of fiscal problems, but they will be solved. So how I answer that question is that Act 20 and 22 have brought that I describe as minds to work. Mm-hmm. It has really changed the way we see. Having a thousand new residents, 700 new service businesses, incremental, because all of them are required at least 3 jobs, now 5 jobs. So it's incremental. Some of them are bringing 100, 200, 300 jobs. And when you see that, and you see something that is very different. When I grew up, all I saw was employees, general managers, middle managers moving to Puerto Rico. And I'm not saying something bad because I have been a manager all my life. But what I'm seeing now is that the owners are moving. The entrepreneurs are the ones that are moving. It's not their employees, their general managers. So they are bringing capabilities that we didn't have. And now we not only have fresh capital, but we have talented people in new industries that we never saw before. In Puerto Rico, we had little venture capital. Now we have private equity. We have insurance companies exporting services. We have IT developers exporting from Puerto Rico using our talented bicultural people. So we are having such different sectors being developed that's powerful. That's economic value.
Good. Manish, before I ask this question, I want to say, you know the Beatles came in through the Ed Sullivan Show, right? That's quite impressive.
My grandfather was ahead of them.
Absolutely.
It was 1959. The Beatles were, I think, 1962, maybe? I don't know, something like that.
That's just awesome.
Yeah.
Here's your question. Benjamin Graham offered a simplified approach to value investing in 1976 at an academic conference when he said, "My first more limited technique confines itself to the purchase of common stocks at less than their working capital value or net current asset value. Given no weight to the plant and other fixed assets, and deducting all liabilities in full from the current assets. We use this approach extensively in managing investment funds, and over a 30-odd year period, we must have earned an average of some 20% per year from this source. In January 1976, we counted over 100 such issues in the Standard & Poor's stock guide, about 10% of the total. I consider it a foolproof method of systematic investment. Once again, not on the basis of individual results, but in terms of the expectable group outcome." Graham's full presentation is printed in Graham, Benjamin, 1976, Financial Analyst Journal, 32.5, 2023. Stocks with market capitalizations less than working capital can be found on the Value Line Bargain Basement list. Do you also peruse the Value Line Bargain Basement list or other filtering lists such as these? If so, which lists are your favorite?
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, as we speak, we are buying shares of a Korean company that'll go unnamed, which is a Graham Net Net. Actually, it's a classic Ben Graham stock, which is trading below below net working capital and such, and net current assets, if you will. And I think we'll do well on it. But the only thing I'd like to state is that we will be lucky if we are even able to buy $1 million of that company shares because it trades by appointment. So in general, that the Graham approach is a very good approach for individual investors. Mm-hmm. It's a very good approach if you're working with small amounts of capital. One of the things of the investment business, which is kind of unusual, is that size, in most industries, size is an advantage. In the investment business, size is a disadvantage.
Right.
And what ends up happening is that when someone like me starts out, I can look at things which where I could put $5,000 to work and it could make a difference in outcomes and net worth and such for me. And as value investors do well, by definition, doing well means that their net worths go up, the amount of capital they manage go up, so they have to move on to other pastures. So we can no longer kind of keep eating those $5,000 lunches, if you will. We have to move on to other, and so what happens is, the next generation coming in can go into those rich pastures that have been abandoned because for them that's great. So the business is a very interesting business because it continuously creates opportunity for new entrants. So the kinds of things Warren Buffett was investing in the 1950s, if those exact same companies came on his radar today with the exact same economics, he would not have any interest. And so those opportunities get left to others. But I would also state one other thing is there are, broadly speaking, two ways one can do value investing. So the original Gramian approach, which is buy assets significantly below liquidation value, is a very low-risk approach. But usually those are bargain basements for a reason, in the sense that in general, those businesses are unlikely to have great growth prospects. Mm-hmm. You're very unlikely to lose money. You're likely to make some money. But the odds that you would end up with a 50 times return or 100 times return or even 5 times return is very low. So the interesting thing about Ben Graham is Ben Graham focused all his life on, he was a product of the Great Depression, and he saw what happened in the Great Depression, so he wanted to protect individual investors from the pitfalls of investing. So he took this very conservative approach. But Ben Graham himself made most of his money by investing in a company called Geico, right? And in fact, in 1950, he was a director of Geico, and the Graham-Newman Partnership had a significant stake in Geico. It was one of the largest positions. And if you looked at the returns they generated from Geico, it dwarfed everything else. And why did they do well in Geico? Well, they did well in Geico because they may have bought it when it was cheap, but it was a great business. So one of the lessons and one of the, I would say, the evolution that usually takes place with value investors is we all start out going for the bargain basement brim. That's where we all cut our teeth, if you will. But the big money really gets made on the long-term ownership of businesses with superior economics. And I think when you get to that, those are really where you can have larger amounts deployed and have greater returns.
Very good, very good. Secretary Bako, you're known to be a leader of successful turnarounds in the private sector. Now you are president of the Government Development Bank, an institution in much need of a turnaround. You have talked about bringing innovation alternatives and viable solutions that will change the status quo of the institution in the future. Can you share with us your vision and some of the initiatives you bring to bank management?
Well, first of all, I would like to mention something of who I am. Monish talked about his grandfather. I would like to talk a little bit about my grandfather. My grandfather used to be a very creative person. He developed a very successful furniture business, and he invented what was in Puerto Rico a very popular, not used in any other part of the world. Puerto Rico used to be very poor, and he decided that the kids and the families needed a bed that when the baby grew, they can get rid of the jail of the and have a bed. So they were buying a bed for the life of the kids, and it became the cama cuna in Puerto Rico. That business evolved, but at the end of the day, it went out of business. Generation after my grandfather. So I learned from my grandfather a lot of things, that you need to be who you really want to be, live your life, be able to say as Frank Sinatra that I did it my way. That was my grandfather. I learned from him the creative side, have your goals. But from his the business that he created, I learned that all businesses can be transformed. All governments and all countries can be transformed. There's no need for a business to disappear, or a country will never disappear. You just transform it. You see the value, where the value is, and then you go and make a strategy of how to really make people understand that that's the value, and make it again a transformed business or a transformed country. And that's what I have done all my life. I really believe that, again, all things can be transformed. You only need people to really believe, have a vision, and execute on it. On the Government Development Bank, and why I did this background, nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. It had been pounded by everyone without knowing the value of the Government Development Bank. The Government Development Bank is a very unique institution that Puerto Rico created to help getting Puerto Rico out of the poverty that Puerto Rico surrounded all Puerto Rico. It was a development bank. Through the years, it lost all its vision, and it became a lender of last resort for a government, and it became a nonsense bank. What I'm going to do is very short time, 5 months. First of all, I see it as an economic development project. I am not see that I am the president of the bank. I am the secretary of economic development, which is taking this project. Second, I have commissioned and I will work on a very short strategic plan, which the bank have no strategic plan over the last 20 years. Things have changed so much, so I'm working on that. And I will go and communicate to all the constituents of why the Government Development Bank is needed as one of the instruments of getting out of this crisis. You need institutions that can get short-term money and invest it in our economy on the long term. And you need that for the municipalities. You need that for a low-income housing using federal programs. That the banking sector is nowadays, with all the restrictions, would not be able to do it. So that's why the Government Development Bank is needed. It will also be needed by the Fiscal Control Board to deploy funds, to deploy the financing that all these projects needs in order to really be able to turn around this economy. So that's the vision. That's what I think that I can do in 4 months, together with keeping the liquidity of the bank. When I got there, everybody had projections of how they get to zero on December 31st. I told them, you're crazy. This bank will be alive, but we have to begin thinking differently. We have to begin thinking that we will be successful and our liquidity will eventually begin to grow, not end up in zero. I will not handle that bank in zero in December. So that's beginning to work also. We are increasing our liquidity.
Excellent. Excellent answer. Thank you. Monish, Warren Buffett's mentor and Columbia University finance professor, Benjamin Graham, writes that the function of margin of safety is in essence that of rendering unnecessary and accurate estimate of the future. How do you seek a margin of safety? How does this relate to your strategy of few bets, big bets, and infrequent bets on page 46 on your book, The Dondo Investor?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Actually, margin of safety is kind of the bedrock of Ben Graham's framework for value investing. And it's a core, it's a very core